Is it working?
Whoa.
You know what I'm used to? I'm used to speaking in the living room of a house. So I think if I don't cause any troubles with our electronics, I'm going to come down here. If you hear lots of screeching, then I'll do something quick. That's better. I feel like I should fill you in, because the last time I was here was 4 years ago. Don't worry, I'm not going to make it all the way through this book. This is just one of my journals, and I just keep track of what God's telling me. And I write it down in here because I don't want to forget. When we were here last, we had our RV parked out there. We were having a VBS downstairs, followed by a camp out there where we lit a fire and we had a lot of food to eat, and it was a fantastic time. And now, 4 years later, I'm struck by the realization that you all thought we were headed down to Mexico and we came back from Turkey. We never quite made it to Mexico. So I thought I'd start by filling you in on what's happened. When we left here, we were headed down to Missouri to spend just a little bit of time and then head into Mexico and continue to do what we did last time. We went down the west coast, down the east coast and came up the west coast, and we were going to go back and run a circuit there again. And in the middle of, I'm going to stay in the zone here. In the middle of all of that, we were in Missouri, and the Lord led us to this boat. And it was in Turkey. Now, I was down in Missouri when I found this thing on the internet. I just happened to have stumbled upon it. I really wasn't necessarily looking for it. I mean, we kind of had this as an idea way off in the future somewhere. But all of a sudden, here it was, and this seemed to be what God had for us. And Mary was up here visiting at the time, and I was down in Missouri, so I kind of cooled it and just kind of put that off on the back burner. When she came back down, we went out for coffee or something, and I said, you know, I think I found what might be the perfect boat. Too bad it's in Turkey. She said, so? And I said, honey, Turkey, the country, I'm not talking about Turkey, Missouri, or any place like that. Well, we got all of our stuff bottled up, backed up, sold, and we flew out with one-way plane tickets to Turkey, and we found this boat. You know, this morning, we were watching Josh and the Big Wall. How many of you have heard of that? Everybody was small kids. Okay, it's VeggieTales. How many of you heard of VeggieTales? Okay, more hands. There we go. Well, somebody gave Josh and the Big Wall to Daniel, and we were watching that this morning. And there in the middle of that was our theme. There was a cucumber or something that spoke up and said, we're not crazy. Our God told us to. We're not crazy. God told us to. And there was this boat. And so we went down to Turkey, and we got this boat. And it was huge. Far bigger than anything I had thought. In fact, I took one look at it and I thought, there's no way I can do this. I can't do this. I can't. But He can. He gave me that scripture in Psalms where David says, Lord, You have trained my hands for battle. And God said, you know what? If I can train a shepherd's hands for battle, I can train your hands to do what you have to do. Well, I want to skip forward and I want to fill you in a little bit on what's happening and what God has done. And then maybe we can go in for something a little bit more exciting. What God is doing right now is He led us to this place called Fethiye in southern Turkey, in southwestern Turkey. It's a city of 50,000 people and not one church. He led us there to look for a lady by the name of Margaret Collins, who was a British lady that had started to live there, had repositioned or had emigrated there to live, retired. And somehow we had her name as a believer, and so God impressed on us that we were to go to Fethiye and find Margaret and see what we could do to help her. And so we did. We found Margaret, and Margaret thought that she was the only Christian in all of Fethiye. 50,000 people, and she thought she was the only Christian. So I said, Margaret, now we have our family, and they're all here too. So, let's get together. And so we started. Daniel's exploring up here. We started prayer walks. We started to kind of walk through the city and pray that God would lead us out where to go next, what to do next. Meanwhile, the boat is kind of anchored out there in the harbor and just staying there just fine. And so we started this prayer walk business, and we prayed that God's presence would come in and that He would guide us and lead us. And during the course of normal events of just setting down and starting to live in there, finding where to buy bread and where to buy flour and all of that things, we would come in contact with other people. And because we live our lives openly, they would say, you're a Christian, aren't you? I'd say, yeah. They said, I thought I was the only Christian in all of Fethiye. So we'd say, no, you've got to come and meet Margaret. And we get together. By this time, we got together on Sundays. And so, really, the Holy Spirit Himself started the church. We really didn't have much to do with it. We're just there. So we meet in living rooms, in people's homes, and there got to be maybe 30, 35 people on a Sunday that would come, and we're getting pretty tight in there. And so a surprising number of the people, a few of them turned out to be Turkish people that really were more comfortable speaking Turkish, but they knew in one case a little bit of English. His name was Duran Yildiz. And so we started to have another service, our Turkish service, in the next village, maybe 20 minutes away by motorcycle. And we started a service there every week, in Turkish. And pretty soon one of Erjan's friends, named Erjan, he started to come. He's a believer now. We have a family that started coming, John and Gule and their children. We have another family that started to come, Zukuf and Fatima and their children. They're all new believers. The Turkish church ends up being somewhere between 12 and 20 people, depending on how many children are there and who's in town. Now, that still left us with an English church service that was continuing to slowly grow. And pretty soon we were really kind of too big for a living room again. And so there were some of us that approached us. They were kind of from a little bit further away, and they had transportation troubles, and they were from a village by the name of Gudjek. And so they wanted to start another English service over in Gudjek, and so we did. So here we are today. I'm not sure whether it's one church, three locations, or three churches, one pastor, or however you want to put that, but whatever it is, we're doing that. And so Sunday becomes a busy day. And then there's midweek Bible studies and all of that kind of stuff. And we were running ourselves ragged trying to get buses to go all over the place. But then the Lord provided for us a little motorcycle, a little scooter, a little 150cc. And so Mary and I pack ourselves on that thing, and we zip off to wherever we're supposed to go and whoever we're supposed to visit today. And so now we're missionaries on wheels. I don't know. Now, where does that leave us with the boat? Because the boat's just kind of there in Fethiye. It's floating. We're living in it. That's our home. It ends up being a very reasonable place to live. But in the future, we're going to continue with this, because our plan, our hope, what we feel like, is that we will be in Fethiye absolutely solidly for the next 2 to 3, maybe 4 years. And by that time, we will have worked ourselves partially out of a job. There will be other people there that will take over and do preaching and teaching and counseling and all of the things that now are done. And we'll be able to take some time off in the summer months. Maybe 3-4 months during the summer. Possibly even 5, depending on the season. And we want to take that time and then take the boat and go to some of these other countries. We have an open invitation to Syria. We have an open invitation by another believer in Cyprus. We're kind of praying towards Libya because they have opened up a great deal in the last couple of years. And they've been taken off the State Department's list of don't go there. So now you can go there again. And that's a little bit of where we think God has us going off into the future. We'll still be there. There's these churches right here in Fethiye. They're not going to go anywhere. They're continuing to grow. I did speak to the mayor of Fethiye because we aren't, let's see, how can I say this? We're not an illegal church, but we're not a legal church either. We're kind of halfway in between. I suppose legally it looks like we're just having a coffee party or something like that. It's private. We can't put a sign out, for instance, that says, here's where church meets. We can't put an ad in the paper that says, there's a church here. If you want more information, call. We can't do that. But I did talk to the mayor before we left. And through a whole series of events where I was led into doing exactly the right thing to do for that culture, which is I go to the senior person and I ask him for his advice. And his advice was, there ought to be a church here in Fethiye, and I want to help you any way I can. So, on our way back down, as we go through Istanbul, we leave on Monday, we'll go through Istanbul, and we'll find an attorney that will help us with papers and filings and all of the things we need to do in order to make this an official church that can put an ad in the paper, that can put a sign out on the road, that can rent a facility if we get too small for a house again, that kind of thing. Because I expect with a city of 50,000 people, there's a lot of room to grow. Now, there are challenges. The biggest challenge is that there is a huge diversity of people that are attending this church. I call it church because I'm not referring to a building or a legal entity. I'm referring to just what, when Jesus said, the gates of hell, you are Peter, and on this church I will build, right? That's what I'm referring to, okay? It's the bride of Christ in Fethiye. But there's only one group. And in that group, we have South Africans, Americans, English, Swiss, Turkish, Welsh, and that's the list right now that will expand. But that's the international or the cultural diversity. German. Oh, I forgot German. Thank you. That's the cultural diversity. All right. Now you want to talk language diversity? Many are comfortable in English. Some are more comfortable in German. Some are more comfortable in Turkish. Okay. Now we talk about doctrinal diversity. Kind of a scary subject, but I'll broach it anyway. Coming to this church, we have Methodists. We have Lutherans. We have Anglicans. We have Baptists. We have Evangelicals. We have Charismatics. And we have one Mormon that comes faithfully every week, and she's not as Mormon as she used to be. So with all of that, we have to learn to concentrate on what is truly important. We have heard the joyful sound, Jesus saves. Jesus saves. Send the light. The light, that's not me. The light that they're talking about there, that's the light of the world. The light from John 1. Jesus, the light of the world. Send the light to Fethiye. Send the light here. Right? Jesus saves. Okay. So, how can I begin to fill you in on what's happened in 4 years in the next 10 minutes? I can't. I can tell you a story. This is a representative story of our maiden voyage in the boat. This is a Turkish boat that's 10 years old. It's new to us. We've never had a wooden boat before. I've never had a diesel engine before. I had a sailboat when we were up here, just a little one that we put behind the car and would drag places and throw in the water. But this one's a little bit bigger. It's like 60 feet on deck, about 75 feet overall that I have to move around. It's about 20 foot wide and weighs 63 tons. There we go. There's some pictures of it downstairs on the board. When you go down there to eat, they'll be down there. So how does God prepare us for this? On our maiden voyage, we took this boat out. We had a very short voyage to make. It was a kind of a formality thing to try to change the flag from a Turkish flag to an American flag, which is a very important thing to do, and we did accomplish that eventually. But as we finished our first night's voyage, we pulled in and we anchored and we buttoned it up and got it ready for the night, and I was exhausted. We had been putting sails up and down and trying things out and experimenting with different whatever happened to be on board from the former owner, who never really sailed it anyway. It was just for show. And so we were experimenting with all this stuff, and we had the kids working and I was working, and I was just exhausted. So I fell into bed. And about 45 seconds later, well, to me, it was really probably an hour later, Mary was shaking me and saying, "Mike, there's a little bit of water in the living room on the floor." I went, "Did you taste it? Is it salt or fresh?" She said, "It's salt water." So I get out of bed. I'm heading down to the engine room, which is the lowest place in the whole boat. And as I'm going there, I said, "Now, if you wipe it up, does it come back?" She said, "Yeah." I wiped it up, but it came right back. I open the door to the engine room, and it's full of water. There is a lot of water in the engine room. In fact, that beautiful diesel engine is about half underwater at this point. Now, I was wondering, I wonder if a diesel engine starts half submerged. But I know that the one little bilge pump that we had was not up to the task of removing those kind of literally tons of water. There is tons of water in the boat at this point. And our little 12-volt bilge pump that needs to be replaced, and there's only one there, that's not up for the task, and it's not working. And it would take weeks to pump that kind of water. But there are valves, and there's a mechanical pump on the engine, and I had taken the time to kind of map out all these valves and pipes down there. There's about a half a dozen different valves, and so I'm reaching down there in the engine room. I'm kneeling down, and I've got water right up to my face, and I'm reaching, kind of, the water is like this, and I'm reaching down and kind of feeling where the valves go and which ones are right. And I set up the valve so that the pump would suck water out of the boat and pump it outside, and ran up and turned the key on the engine and listened to that engine roar to life, half submerged underwater. It ran for all of about 45 seconds before the water came into the intake and sucked it right into every one of the pistons, and it was full of water and it just died right there. So now there's nothing left to do, and water is coming in. It takes a long time for a boat of that size to sink. I mean, it's not going to sink in a couple of minutes. And the truth is, we're not physically in any danger. I mean, my kids could all swim to shore. Even I could swim to shore, and my kids are all much better swimmers than I am. It's calm, but there we are. By this time, Mary is downstairs in the boat in the main living room area, and she's splashing around in water because there's about that much water in the living room at this point. And she looks up and says, "Well, what's next?" I said, "Well, I've used up my bag of tricks. I think we've got to start bailing." You know, there's this old nautical saying. It goes like this. There is nothing faster than a scared sailor with a bucket. In about 30 seconds, Mary had all of our kids lined up into a bucket brigade, where we had pots and pans and buckets and whatever would hold water, and we had them dipping down into the lowest point of the boat and passing them one to the next, up the steps, into the lounge area, up onto the deck, and I was throwing them overboard. And we were passing buckets like this, and we were moving water. And we had been doing this for, well, we were starting to get kind of tired. And all of a sudden, Mary started to sing. She sang, "Jehovah Jireh." You know that song? "My provider, his grace is sufficient." You know? "Jehovah Jireh, my provider, his grace is sufficient for me." Jehovah Jireh, my provider, whose grace is sufficient for me. My God shall supply all my needs according to his riches and glory. He gives his angels charge over me. Jehovah Jireh cares for me. So we're bucketing water up and out of this thing, and we're singing Jehovah Jireh. We take a break about every 5 minutes because you get really tired, and then we get back into it. And I'm trying to get the attention of somebody to help, but I can't get anybody's attention. At some point, however, they came to realize that we were in trouble back in this little Turkish town called Palamutbuku. And the fishermen were all in there, and they were all at the bar drinking for the evening. And they figured out that there was a Turkish boat in trouble out there. And like what always happens in Turkey, if there's a boat in trouble, the bar cleans out. And so somewhere in the middle of about 15, 20 minutes after we started bailing, I looked out, and there coming out the bay of this little town was an absolute parade of boats. There were fishing boats, small, large. There was even a big goulette that was coming out. And they all had full of people that came to watch, to help, to do what they could do. And they all come out there. They came towards us. And the first one up the ladder is, I think, the only one that speaks English in Palamutbuku. His name was Alton. He comes up the ladder and he says this, "Hello, friend. I know this boat, and I know Ison, the man that built this boat, and we're going to help you save it." And he was followed up by a crew of Turkish fishermen that pulled up the anchor by hand. Now, let's see. I've got a 150-pound anchor with half-inch chain, and I've got 660 feet of chain and no winch. So they pulled up this anchor by hand, got it all on board. By that time, they had a bigger boat hooked onto us, and they dragged us back into the harbor, tied us up to the quay. There was another crew of Turkish guys that had found an old pump that they were twisting wires together to get the pump to work, and they dropped it down in there and got that pump going to start pumping the boat out. We were still taking in water too fast for the pump to work. So they got another one somewhere, dug it out, and dusted it off and got that thing all, you know, how they work in the foreign countries. I mean, they don't just plug something in. You got to, you know, grab the wire and the screwdriver and twist wires together and tape it quick. And okay, so by the time they got done, they had the boat pumped out after a couple, 3 hours, enough so that we could find the problem, fix it, and finish drying it out. Of course, that left us with a boat that had an awful lot of water in, and most of the things that we owned were full of salt water, and it was a late night. So we slept on deck that night under the stars because that was a dry place. And the next morning, we got busy pulling mattresses and sheets and all that kind of stuff out and getting them dried in the sun. And we also set about getting a mechanic from a nearby town to come out because we also had a diesel engine full of salt water. And they had to come and fix all that and rebuild all the alternators and the starter motor, and all of that stuff has to be taken care of. We got all that done. And it took a couple of days to get that done. But we got all that done a couple of days later. And the mechanic submitted me a bill for $1,000. That's $1,000 I didn't have. But any of you that know anything about mechanics, you'll probably realize that that's probably not a bad price for what they had to do, but it's still $1,000 I didn't have. And so I went back to Mary. Okay, let me take just a quick break. 7 years prior to that, God had impressed on me that he needed a fund of money that he had control over and I didn't. It wasn't anything big. It was just this little pouch. And the three rules on this money was, when he told me to, I would put money in it. And I wouldn't take money out until he told me to. And I would never, ever count it. Those are the three rules. So I had never done that. But you know, you kind of have an idea, and you didn't really think there was anything like that in there. But Mary and I both knew that that was a place to go. And so we sat down on our bed, we laid hands on this, and we prayed. Now, Hebrew is, Jehovah Jireh is Hebrew for God, my provider. I wonder what's Hebrew for God, my counterfeiter. Because I am telling you, we pulled out fives and tens and $20 bills, and we counted and we stacked them, and I'm telling you, we got to $1,000. and it was empty. It was done. But we paid our bill. And we continued our journey and got to the next place. Now, why do I say this? It's very representative, I think. Many times when God's called you to do something, it ends up turning out a whole lot different than what you anticipate and a whole lot more difficult than what you think. But you're never alone. That's been pretty representative of how things have gone for us. They've been harder than we thought. But God's there. And at the tail end, I look at where we are right now, and I say, you know what? This is God working. We are supposed to be here. We're supposed to be here right now, and we're supposed to be doing this right now. This is no coincidence. Now, the truth is, we've learned a whole lot along the way on how to depend on Him and faith. Well, that was one of the things He taught me, is faith. Faith is a muscle. If you don't lose it, if you don't use it, you lose it. But if you use it, it gets stronger with use. Jehovah Jireh. I don't have time. Okay. Let's leave it at that. Faith is a muscle. If you don't use it, you lose it. But since faith is the means by which we please God, Hebrews 11, then we have to have faith. And it has to be increasing. Yeah? Okay, come on.
I just want to challenge you about a little bit about faith today. Because the Lord has just been showing me what really is a lack of faith. A lack of faith. Okay. A lack of faith is not trusting Jesus. It's a lack of belief. It's a lack of believing that He says what He says He will do. It boils down to your personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And now, I kind of doubt, I might be wrong, but I kind of doubt that God is calling any of you to sell everything you own, buy a Turkish boat, and move to Turkey. You can correct me if I'm wrong, okay? But I know that every single one of you, in your relationship with the Lord, He is calling you to a new step of faith. He is calling you into a new realm of faith with Him, something more that He wants you to trust Him for. And if you don't think that you have anything that you're not trusting Him for, start reading the Scriptures. Okay? When the Scripture says, I am fearfully and wonderfully made, do you really believe that? Or do you look in the mirror and you say, my eyes are too close together. My thighs are too fat. I want green eyes, not blue eyes. Okay? Are you having faith that God knew and created you the way He wanted you to be? I challenge you to open the Scriptures and move into a new way, a new measure of faith. There's one other area that I want to challenge you in faith, and that is, there's this little Scripture, and it's one that I have worked on since I was very small. And it goes like this: do everything without grumbling and complaining. Do everything without grumbling and complaining. Now, you might ask, come on, that is not a matter of faith. That's just being crabby. Okay, well, it is being crabby. But here's why it's a measure of faith. Because when we are complaining, we are saying, God, you are doing something wrong. I don't believe that you have me here so that I can learn something or so that I can glorify you. I'm just here because I'm miserable and I'm going to complain. And so I just want to challenge you to have the faith every day to get up in the morning. When my children were little, the Lord showed me something, a principle. Because, you know, I had four small children. You're up in the night, you're tired, and then they wake up. And when there's four of them, they, you know, at least someone isn't. There's one that's a night owl, and then there's, of course, one that's an early riser. So mommy's up late and gets up early. So mommy's tired. And the Lord showed me, instead of grumbling and complaining when my kids got up, He wanted me to speak truth. And so every morning, when my kids got up, whoever got up, I met them with a huge smile and I said, "I'm so glad you got up." Okay? Now, let's think about it. What is the alternative? I do want them to wake up and get out of bed this morning. Okay? And so that is where it started. And what happened is a joyfulness entered our home every morning. And my children woke up and weren't grumbling and complaining, even if they were tired. Instead, we woke up with joy and we were worshiping the Lord and we were going about our chores because it was just an attitude change. And so I just want to challenge you to have faith, to believe what the Bible says, and to believe that He is big enough and that He knows.
And with that, I think we'll turn this back over to you, Pastor.